A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. This evening, a very nice Christmas special coming to you from Derry. And my very special guest is Irish soprano Margaret Keys. Margaret, you're so welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It really is.
Now, I was lucky enough, Margaret, to hear you singing live recently in Dublin. And there was, you could hear a pin drop and standing ovation. And what a stage presence. Oh my God, amazing. Before we go into, of course, your career, at the moment, everything. Yeah. Can you tell us, you started singing at 4 years of age or something?
Yeah, I was pretty young. Four. I suppose it had come from a musical family, but nobody was professional musicians, but we just loved music. It's almost that kind of Irish family sort of feel, you know, where we just sit around and sing songs. And I suppose then I just really loved it and followed old stars like Diana Durbin and Joseph Locke, because my grandparents lived next door to us, you see, so that any kind of songs or artists that they listened to, then I was kind of inspired by them. And I was never trendy. I never really listened to pop music. I was never really, that never really, you know, I was never driven towards that, but I just loved all that old style music. I was almost like a romantic at heart, really, when I was quite young. So that just took me in, and I went with it and loved it.
My God, that is amazing. Like I remember my mother playing Joseph Locke records, yeah, on the old record player, Blaze Away.
We'll Meet the Bonfires and all of that. You know, all those songs are just sort of stunning, stunning music.
Yeah, and your rendition of Danny Boy the other night, of course, was just unbelievable.
Oh, thank you.
And so you're an original Derry girl.
I'm an original one. I mean, I know the world has been introduced to Derry girls recently through the brilliant TV programme. But Derry, Derry has a lot of very special Derry girls and girls that are in the industry. You know, we have Roma Downey, we have Nadine Coyle, and then from the classical side of the world, you know, there's myself and there's Ruth McGinley, who's a classical pianist, and so many different artists from Derry that have gone international, which is really, it's great to see.
And when did you discover, you know, I could actually be really good at this?
Am I good?
Oh my goodness.
You're always asking, are you ever good enough? I think we all do that. But I think, you know, winning competitions at a young age, and you know your mom and dad's always going to tell you you're good, so you knew that was maybe quite subjective, you know. But I think maybe I started to win at a very young age. I won the Trinity College of Music London medal. I got top marks in examinations, and over the whole of the UK, I won the gold medal there. So I think at that point, I was 16, and I kind of thought, you know, maybe there's a career in this for me, and that's when I thought maybe I could take it seriously.
That's amazing. I mean, the Trinity College gold medal at 14, obviously then you were like, oh, you must have discovered, well, and a passion, of course, for that. I mean, you must have absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I totally, and that's the thing. I think there was a genuineness to the way I approached music. I genuinely loved it. It wasn't I want to be a star or I want to be, you know, on the stage. I just really genuinely loved it. And I remember when I went for my audition then to the Royal Academy of Music, that's what one of the lecturers said, you know, we really enjoyed how genuine your performance was and we felt every word. It wasn't stagey, you know, it didn't come across as something that was jazz hands and learned at a stage school. It came from the heart, and I think that's something that I learned from, you know, my own home and learning music very authentically.
Yeah, and of course the scholarship then was to it was in Scotland, wasn't it?
It was in Royal Scottish Academy, yeah. So I trained there for 2 years. Well, I trained to be a teacher first, but I would have travelled up and down to Dublin. I went to the Royal Irish Academy, and Irene Sanford was the professor of singing there, so I trained with her. And then when I was with her, she put me forward for the audition. I never really thought I could do it, but she, to be fair to her, now she was very encouraging. And I flew over and just did the one audition, and I got the scholarship. And then I left then after I graduated as a teacher. I left then and went and trained for another 2 years. It was quite intensive, you know, and the actual training was hugely, hugely beneficial. Especially now, I can see how beneficial it is for me now. But it was definitely hard, and it's definitely a hard industry, even no matter how good you are. So in ways, I had to try and open my own doors a lot of the time.
And of course, you got classes when you were a young girl. There's an amazing tradition in Derry of music. And I mean, you know, I suppose there must be a lot of kids out there that have never gone for classes and probably have great voices. And is that a real way of kind of finding out, I suppose, when you're trained like that?
I think it is, but I do think there's a lot of people are aware of that now, that there is a lot of undiscovered talent. And I was lucky enough that I was able to go to lessons and my parents were able to supply that for me. But there's a lot of children that don't have that. So I'm an ambassador for a thing called, for a charity called Children in Arts, which supply that funding to children who maybe don't necessarily have that opportunity. And they will give funding to children and areas and schools to actually supply singing lessons for them, or, you know, anything artistic for them. So I think that's important, to be able to bring out talent in young kids now.
Brilliant. And I mean, growing up in Derry when you were a young girl, I mean, were your influences here, as you were saying earlier, I suppose, from all over?
Yeah, all over. We did a thing called the Derry Fesh. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
The Fesh.
The Fesh.
Yeah.
The Fesh and the Fesh Cult.
I entered the Fesh a few times myself.
So I think that was a really good platform because it gave you the opportunity to stand on a stage in front of an audience. Because before you were singing in your own bedroom, you were singing for your parents and they just loved you no matter what you were like, you know, and nobody got the chance to hear you. So to have that kind of critique, I suppose, at such a young age and be able to stand up and be judged, it was definitely something that helped me at such a young age. And then I would have went through the stages of the senior competitions, the junior competitions. You would have went through each one, you know, and that definitely stood me in good stead then for a career.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you know, at the moment now we're in a strange time in the world. When, you know, we're for hospitality, and I've just had the most lovely time actually in Bishopsgate here, which
beautiful.
Of course it's now become almost it's only 6 years, it's become almost an institution, and the history there of the Gentlemen's Club, and it's amazing the amount of people that, I suppose, for different reasons like lockdown, have now discovered Derry and a lot of Northern Ireland that they wouldn't have before.
Yeah, it's like the staycation now, you know, we are completely discovering lots of places that we didn't know before. Lots of people are, I mean, going to that event in Dublin last week was wonderful for me because there were some hotels that I'd never really heard of, and I thought, well, I have to check these hotels out. So yeah, it has been a pandemic, yes, and it's been terrible for the industry, for both entertainment and for, you know, hotels. But there's been a good side to it too, because we're trying to help each other out, I think, and that's camaraderie at its best, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, music, like sport in a way, really, it's the great leveller, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Everybody loves music. No, I know, and whether it's a classical music or whether it's pop music, there is something that everybody can discuss. They can have a sit and have a chat and go, God, you know, I love that song, or I don't love that song. So it definitely is a leveller, and music is, it's the universal language.
Brilliant. And I mean, for you, it must be amazing to be singing back live again.
Well, that was my first performance in almost 2 years. I have been doing a lot of recordings, and I have been working for BBC Songs of Praise and a lot of that. But with regards to a live audience, I missed it so much, and it was just so good to have people there live and to clap and it just to have that feeling again. You know, I missed it so much, and I wasn't even nervous because I was just so grateful to be back. You know?
No, I know. I mean, I heard Nathan Carter chatting recently about his Glasgow concert, and he was in the Cork Opera House just a few weeks ago, and he was just saying, like, it was almost like he was blooming again. You know,
just smiling from ear to ear.
Yeah. It's very difficult at the moment. But I mean, what's really great is, I mean, the interaction. I mean, again, it was so lovely to experience that. You know, and you lifted us all off to another place, and I think, I mean, it was so unexpected, because you go to a lot of events and you think, you know, you're going to be learning all about this, that, and then to have that as a bonus, it was just amazing.
Well, it was lovely to be a part of it, and I suppose I like the glamorous side of it as well. So I hadn't put on a frock in 2 years either, so I thought,
Aguna.
used to my tracksuit bottoms all day. So I just thought, where's my frocks? I need my frocks. So I dusted them off.
Yeah, I know. And we're on radio here today, but for anybody that, you know, we'll look you up online, of course, yeah, and see you, Margaret. You're of course, you're absolutely stunning,
oh,
you
thank
know.
You
and
very much.
Your red dress the other night, you
the
know, you
red,
were you
yeah,
were absolutely
you always go
amazing.
For the lady in red, so, whenever yeah, you're not sure, go for
it
red.
Was high, it was high end, very stylish. And again, very Christmassy, okay,
very
which is
Christmassy,
kind of on our
yeah,
team for today
I
as well.
I missed my frocks. I did miss them hugely, and I think they missed me too.
Yeah. Well, hopefully now they'll get to be out and about
we'll
again.
Get a few
yeah,
things, yeah, I'm yeah, sure. Hopefully.
Brilliant. Now, in line with our lovely theme, I suppose, for Christmas, now uh-huh, we're all heading into Christmas now. We're all looking forward to that. What have you picked for your first choice of music for us this evening?
Well, I recorded this song with the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra, and this was just before lockdown. It was wonderful to do it, and it's just everybody's favourite carol, and it's Silent Night.
Silent Night.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com
on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland, our special Christmas edition, coming to you from lovely Derry with my special guest, Margaret Keyes. Now, Margaret, that was absolutely beautiful, Silent Night. Now, you were discovered, of all places, in Rotorua mm-hmm, in New Zealand.
I know, very strange.
Could you tell
it?
Us about that?
I know most artists start locally and then work their way internationally. I started the other way around. I'm still being discovered locally. Nobody knows me here.
But well, that'll all change now after this programme, I'll tell you.
Of course it will. So, yeah, I don't know if you remember the programme for, they were searching for a star in The Sound of Music, Maria in The Sound of Music, and that was Andrew Lloyd Webber. So I was in that and I made it to the final 20 in that. And then Andrew Lloyd Webber gave 10 of the artists a scholarship. It was the BBC Fame Academy Award, and I was sent to New York to train with Opera New York and to train with a lot of Broadway stars. So I was given an apartment in Queensborough. It all sounds very glamorous.
This was at a young age now.
Well, this wasn't overly young. I mean, I was in my early 20s.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm only 25 now, so it was only last year.
Wow.
Done a lot in a year.
Amazing. Amazing.
So yeah, I got an apartment in Queensborough, and to be honest, it sounds very glamorous, but I shared the flat with a lovely little mouse. I think it was a family of mice there, but you know, it was fine by the end of it all. But I was there for quite a little while, and it was a wonderful experience. Trained with some amazing stars, and then I happened to be doing an event. It was just like a corporate event within New York, and the producer of the Rotorua New Zealand Proms concert was there, and he invited me to come and sing at that. And I immediately accepted, because I'd never been to New Zealand, and I thought, God, that's a great opportunity to come to New Zealand. But I didn't realise that there'd be 35,000 people at it.
Wow.
There was a lot of people there, and they were coming from everywhere, so this was a big event. And I thought, my goodness. So when I was there, there happened to be someone in the audience who was from both Sony and Universal Records, and they asked me then to record a demo after it. And from that then, I went in and I did a very quick demo. I did Danny Boy, and I can't even remember what the other one was. Did it very quickly and fired it off to them. And I got a call then from Universal that they would like to sign me for an album deal, and released about 6 months later my first album in Australia and New Zealand.
Well, I mean, you could say, what amazing synchronicity. Or isn't that incredible how, you know, just things can happen yeah, like that, and from one part to the other end of the world, you know, yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it was definitely, there is, people say 90% hard work, 10% luck, and that definitely was the case there for me. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and someone saw and heard something that they thought would work, and it seemed to work. And then I wanted badly to make my way back, because even though I was doing well there, I there was nothing really happening back here or in the UK. So that was my next boat of call. I wanted to do more things at home.
And did you absolutely love New Zealand?
New Zealand is it's just, I called it Ireland only with sunshine, because it was just, and the people are so very friendly, they're very Irish as well. Just loved it. It was so unspoilt. It was an unspoilt landscape, stunning places, and I've visited quite a few times since.
Amazing. And what a wonderful life. I mean, it's such a young age. And I mean, here you are travelling around the world on the road already.
On the road already, I know. It was definitely hard and difficult, but I loved it. And I'm glad I did it then. I don't know if I could be keeping doing that now. But I knew I wanted to set my sights in other places. So it was all really about making connections and taking the opportunities and going for it and not turning things down, you know, as no matter how little or insignificant you felt it was going to be, there was always going to be somebody there, like yourself. You were at that event last week, so I thought, well, there we go. There's a wonderful man that's another opportunity.
I thought that the listeners here on Sunshine, I just thought I'd give them a special treat for Christmas.
Oh, well, listen, that's very kind of you.
Wonderful. And I mean, career highlights, Margaret. I mean, Carnegie Hall, Pope Francis, Andrea Bocelli, Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
Can you tell us, I mean, what a list.
I know. I think after Australia and New Zealand, I came back and I signed to a very good management and an agent, and opportunities were coming along. And they just wanted, they so happened to need an Irish contingent to represent Ireland for the meeting of the families, and that was happening in Philadelphia, and a few people were put forward for it, and I happened to be selected to go to Philadelphia and sing there for Pope Francis. And that was his first trip to America, actually, and that was in 2016, I think that was. And it just so happened that Bocelli was doing it as well, and so was Aretha Franklin, and I was kind of in the next changing rooms to them, and it was just very surreal. Bocelli was there, his little daughter was running around, he's a very lovely man, and his wife is his manager as well, so very friendly. I couldn't have asked for a nicer man to perform with and to be in the next changing room with, you know. So times I just sort of looked there and I thought, how did I get here? How did I get from Derry? I actually get to be in the next stage room from Bocelli and singing for Pope Francis, but it can happen.
Yeah, and I mean, if anyone wants to Google that, by the way, Margaret Keys with Andrea Bocelli, I was listening to it and like another goosebump moment. Oh, it was just fantastic.
Thank you.
And Aretha Franklin, of course, another amazing icon, wasn't she?
Oh, wonderful. And I do remember the vision of, because it was the reporter cabin, at changing rooms, and I remember we were all in my mum was with me at that stage, and Bocelli was next door, and we're looking out the window, and Miss Franklin was coming out of the car, and I thought, oh, here she is, you know, getting really excited, thinking, why? And she got out and she had a big entourage, and they had 7 suitcases, but she only wore one dress, so I do not know what was in the 7 suitcases.
You don't have 7 suitcases yet.
No, I didn't even have 7 frocks.
Like, do you remember when Whitney Houston used to bring her own washing machines with her? Do you remember?
So I thought, is this what I have to do? I need to get an entourage of 7 suitcases, but only wear 1 frock.
Wow. So, yeah, a lot of choice there.
A lot of choice,
wow.
Yeah.
So a real diva.
Well, she's allowed to be.
I
look on a diva as not somebody who is pushy or hard to work with. I look on someone who, a diva, as someone who's incredibly talented. So she was an incredibly talented woman, and she's allowed to be a diva.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's something great about it, isn't
there? It's the presence of it all. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. And the presence. And is that something that you, I mean, you have that presence as well. I mean, I've seen Sir Julian Fellowes, you know, people know from Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
I mean, heard you singing.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was absolutely mesmerised as well and said lovely things about you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's presence that you have. I mean, I don't think you can teach that, can you?
I don't know. It's hard for me to judge about what my own presence is like. It's just, I just love people. I love singing. I get an awful lot of joy from it. Yes, it's a job, but it's also a passion. And it's hard for me to say that I have a presence, but I would hope that whatever I do, people enjoy it, you know? So I think that's just for me to enjoy it, and to see people are enjoying it is enough for me.
Yeah, brilliant. And then, of course, Buckingham Palace as well. And you tell us about that, Prince Charles.
So I'm a patron to a few of their charities, as I mentioned before, the Children's Trust and the Children in Arts. So I perform at that, and Boney M was there one year, she was singing. Just so many different people that are, you know, you're singing on the same platform as them, and that's the Christmas Carol concert. So I'm just so honoured at times, and you're thinking, do they really want me back? Are they sure they want me back?
Yeah, no, I mean, because I can imagine, I mean, it must have been, I mean, is it just something else? It's almost surreal, I can imagine. I mean, Buckingham Palace, when you're there, sort of, you know, singing to yourself.
It is,
like,
it is.
Isn't it amazing what, you know, such brilliant the way music can transport, I suppose, around the world like that?
But I think the good thing is, too, is it, you know, there's no division in music, and that's the beauty of it. You know, I'm a girl from Derry and I'm over singing in Buckingham Palace, you know, but I'm there to sing, you know, and there's absolutely no division in that whatsoever. It's there to unite, and I can definitely see that.
And I mean, it came across the other night as well. I mean, the passion is just so amazing. Is Christmas kind of like a favourite time of year for you?
Oh, I love Christmas. Yeah, I definitely. I've always loved Christmas. It's not only because of the music, but, you know, it's just a lovely time. Family time, obviously, and just rituals. We have a lot of rituals, you know. I still hang out my stocking, you know. That's important, you know. We still eat the cooked ham at Christmas Eve, you know, all of that. So you have your rituals, and no matter where you are in the world, you want to get... There was only one Christmas I spent away from home, and I didn't enjoy it, so... no matter where I am, I always try to get home just to do those little silly rituals.
Yeah, and just a few weeks ago when I was actually up, I was up again in Derry and they lit the Christmas lights.
Yes.
And I was here for the Turner Prize a few years ago and they had Lumiere.
Yeah.
And people, of course, will know that Derry's famous for Halloween and the Walled City is literally with the big moon hanging, and it just lends itself. I think it's a real Christmas place, Derry, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, they're very good at festivals, Derry and lights. We love our lights. We love sparkle. So yeah, I mean, Derry has a real... There's not only just musicians from Derry, but there's a lot of creatives from Derry, and to be able to put on, you know, festivals and Halloween parades and Christmas parades. There's so much talent that stems beyond music. You know, I know we're known as a musical town, but in order for that to happen, you need a lot of creatives behind it. So there's great productions in Derry as well.
Wonderful. Now, what have you chosen for your second choice of music this evening?
Well, my second one, Ed, it's something I sang to you, not obviously personally, but the other evening. And
oh my goodness, I was feeling really special there now.
But that can happen at a price.
Yeah, maybe over a little coffee later.
And this seemed to go down really well, and this was performed originally on The Prince of Egypt. It's a film called The Prince of Egypt, and Celine Dion, Andrea Bocelli, Whitney Houston, they've all performed it, and it's When You Believe.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland with my very special guest, soprano Margaret Keys. That was another beautiful piece of music, Margaret.
Thank
wow.
You, Ed. It is
wonderful.
Lovely, isn't it?
Absolutely. Happy Christmas, everybody. Now, plans, career plans ahead, career highlights. What's next?
Career highlights. Probably singing for the Pope, Carnegie Hall. I performed there. The Albert Hall, sang at that BBC Radio 2 Christmas specials with lots of different performers that I would love, that I've always loved to sing with. But if we talk about the future, I'd love to be part of the André Rieu tour. I think he really brings classical music to the masses, and ultimately that's what I'm about. Because some of your listeners may not necessarily feel that they like classical music.
Well, that's very interesting, yes. Right? Because it's funny, I had one or two friends of mine that said, oh, opera is so boring,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
And then when they hear a certain song maybe, or an aria, they hear from Puccini or Madame Butterfly, and they go like, and it's like, oh my, I didn't realise, you know, that sort of. So you were telling me earlier about something called popover. Popera. Sorry.
Popera. Yeah.
Popera.
Or it's also called classical crossover. So it crosses the bridges. So it's allowing people to kind of cross into that genre where they may have thought, oh, no, that's not for me. That's too heavy. Whereas something like O Mio Bambino Caro, you know, from Gianni Schicchi, people will know it.
Yeah.
And it's classical music is used a lot in TV adverts. It's used a lot in, you know, things that, you know, throughout people in hotels. And they do know it. They just don't realise it. So the crossover and the popera is there to kind of say, yeah, you know the song and this is what this song is and this is what it's from. So it's almost kind of what I would call educating.
Oh, very good. I like that.
I do love my words.
Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant. That's really interesting. I mean, I remember being in at the Verona Opera a couple of years ago, and I was lucky enough to see Aida, and I was there another year for Tosca. And I mean, wow, you know, it was unbelievable. Really unbelievable.
No, and it does touch everybody. Some of it may be over their heads because it's a different language, but there is meaning behind every opera, and most operas are tragedies, you know, and somebody's going to die at the end at some point, you know, we're going to have some tragedy there, but that's what makes it. Everybody loves a tear, you know, and it pulls at the heartstrings. But my whole idea of what I want to do with my career is to introduce the more masses to this music that I'm singing and allowing them to cross over and say, guys, you know, you actually do like this music and this is something you could really, really take to.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. A lot of people, Margaret, during the whole COVID thing and lockdowns and all the stuff we've been through, a lot of people actually got introduced to opera and started listening to stations that they didn't want to hear anything about numbers of this and got to listen to relaxing stations and where they actually got a lot of, they got introduced to classical. And of course, once that box is opened, that's it.
That's it. You know, and that's the thing. There's certain points for different types of music in your life. You know, when you're getting married, you're not going to have, some pop song that, I don't know, I'm not very trendy when it comes to it, but you'll not have an up-to-date pop song as you walk up the aisle. You will turn to like a Mozart piece that you know, or something that's like Ave Maria, which is Schubert. You know, everybody knows it, but that's a Schubert piece of music and that's a classical composer, but everybody loves it. And when they hear that Ave Maria, they're like, oh, and they stop in their tracks. I mean, I've seen buskers in the streets of Dublin singing Ave Maria and the whole city is listening to it. So that is classical music, and people need to realise that, yeah, you do actually really like classical music. You just need to sit back and go, yeah, this is, I know this. And I think people are afraid of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, as you said, because it does, it really is music that touches the soul, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think the other evening as well, when I began to sing, there was a lot of younger people there too, as well as, you know, slightly older or whatever, middle-aged. And I don't know where you fit in there, but you can decide that one.
Thanks a million. Yeah. We'll leave that now.
We'll leave you to the
young at heart.
Youthful.
Very young at heart, Margaret.
Young at heart.
But that was actually true, because there was a lot of younger people. And I mean, you could see, I mean, there was this amazing look of wonder.
Yeah. And there was a picture taken, and I must actually show it to you later, but there was a picture taken from afar and everybody had their phones out and they were all filming it. And I think, you know, they want to keep that so they can listen to that again. And you and they want to really remember that moment, and that was a piece of music that really touched them, you know. And it's for me as an artist, it's fabulous. I love to see it, and I love to see the response from people that might not necessarily have ever really thought they were interested in it before.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the event was in our award-winning Epic Immigration Museum, and God, everything was epic about
it
the
was
evening.
Totally epic,
absolutely amazing. Now you have a solo tour planned for Canada next year as well.
I do, my first tour of Canada. I've been to America and I've been to Europe, parts of Europe, not all of Europe, but this is the first Canadian tour, and I've always wanted to do this. So it's called Believe, Margaret Keys Believe, and it's a 2-3 week tour of Canada, and I'm really excited about that. So fingers crossed everything will go as planned. And before that, I also have my sixth album that I'm recording and releasing. So I have a lot on, which is good.
Isn't that brilliant? Yeah. Your sixth album, my goodness, that is amazing. You must have started when you were about six, did you? That's incredible.
Three.
And what, I suppose your albums, you just literally get totally immersed in them and you just lose yourself. And then it's like the most amazing feeling, I suppose, when they come out.
It's great because it's so hard. It's quite tedious at the beginning because you're choosing songs and then you're thinking, will I maybe write one of my own? Will I cover something? If I cover that, will people scrutinize it? So it's very difficult sometimes when you're doing an album. It's picking what the right thing and giving that kind of feel that's personal to you. But at the same time, if you do another artist's song, that you're doing it justice. So it's quite tedious, that part. But the recording of it then is fantastic. You go with a full orchestra, a 70-piece orchestra, and you know you're thinking they're all playing for me to sing with them. You know, and they're probably much more talented than I am. You know, but that sound of the orchestra, when you're just starting to record, it sends shivers down your spine.
Yeah, and I mean, it certainly does that. And I mean, it went in, your album, it went straight in, yeah, in the classic. It's, yeah. I mean, what you can tell us about.
Yeah, well, it was actually released, which was unfortunate for me. It was released when Harry and Meghan were getting married. So everything was shooting up the charts. And I thought, trust me to release it, you know, and their wedding album will be number one. And, you know, anybody who sings at the album and the wedding will be number one. But it did really well. And I went straight to the top of the classical charts and the classic FM charts. And that was really, that was immense for me. And it sold really well. So I was so delighted with that.
And the new album now?
Yeah, well, that's in the very early stages. We haven't even decided a name yet. We're looking through songs and I quite potentially may do a duet with somebody who's sort of known. So we're in talks with a few different people. So I'd love to do a duet with somebody within the album too.
Oh, wow, that'd be amazing. Yeah. And I mean, your ambition, I suppose, is it everyone's ambition, like a beautiful soprano like yourself to sing at La Scala?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Do you have a favourite? I mean, is Italy a place for you that you just feel like I'd love to spend a year there?
Yeah, I mean, the romance of Italy itself is just, and as you were saying, you've been to a few operas in Italy, and just the production, the vast production of operas in Italy is just, it's just to die for, really. So of course, yeah, like every soprano, that's your dream. And Covent Garden, you know, there's so many different, but I'd also do love to do some collaborations with people that you might not think, you know, that you'd like to do a collaboration with, you know, like...
Yeah, like when Freddie Mercury did that fabulous, Barcelona,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. You know, that kind, because I mean, and that can go down really well. Mm. So yeah, that's kind of in the pipeline too, looking at different artists that maybe you could collaborate with that might work well together.
And you actually, you knew our own very famous Veronica Dunn as well.
Ronnie, Ronnie was wonderful, hugely inspirational, a great character. I was taught by her for a while, and she also adjudicated me in competitions, and she was a very tough judge.
She did come across as somebody, I mean, who wouldn't take any prisoners and
not
very
all.
Straight talking.
But listen, it did us no harm. No harm.
And well, she was an absolute legend.
And I mean, and rightly so. And she's left a legacy behind of music and classical and singing for, you know, in Ireland that'll never be forgotten.
And I mean, yourself as a teacher, I mean, and you know, your great passion for helping kids as well, beautiful for giving back.
Yeah.
For the future, that will be part of the plan,
absolutely.
I suppose.
Yeah, I already am integrating it into my career, and especially even since lockdown, that was more important to me. I was doing a lot of online coaching sessions, and believe it or not, there's some beautiful stories, but there was a gentleman that I teach, and they're come from all over the world, because you didn't think that this was possible. You know, I was teaching people from South Africa, from Australia, from America, and there's a little gentleman from England, and he's still with me, and he won't ever miss his lesson, and he dresses in a shirt and tie for the lesson, and you know, he takes it very seriously, and what a stunning voice, and he's 82, you know, and never had a singing lesson. So these are the kind of things that I'm thinking, God, you know, if I can do this,
yeah, amazing.
It's
never
amazing.
Too late.
No, it's never too late. So yeah,
I might sign up for the new year.
Let's do it. I think we should have Sunshine Radio, and we should have the whole team do singing lessons, and I'm up for giving you a few lessons.
That's brilliant. Oh my God, that sounds fantastic. Now, you love Christmas, so Christmas will be at home again this year, I presume, yeah?
It will be at home, yeah. As I said, I only spent one Christmas ever away, and it wasn't the same. You know, you have to come back. You have to be at home for Christmas. It's, as they say, it's all about the family, and that's important to me. And I always sing in my local church every Christmas as well too, so no matter where I'm, I always come back and I sing there every Christmas. And
I would say there won't be too many empty seats at that. Wonderful to chat to you. Before we finish up, for any aspiring young sopranos out there, you know, what would your message be, your advice?
Well, I mean, if you're very young, I would say take every opportunity that you can. Join every local amdram, join choirs. You know, try and get lessons if you can. And then perhaps maybe if you're slightly older, you know, give yourself, you know, take the chances. You know, because I had to take chances. Some paid off and some didn't. And I think don't always believe your own hype either. I think that's important. Because some classical musicians have that air about them, you know, and sometimes I think it's important to be likable. And if don't ever pass that, you know, because be good, but just don't think you're too good.
Wow, brilliant advice. So, Margaret, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I'm so delighted that you were able to come on for our Christmas special. What have you chosen for us to wish us all a happy Christmas for your last piece of music this evening?
Well, I couldn't possibly bypass this. I think this is the whole of the world's favourite Christmas carol, and I'd like to wish everyone on Sunshine Radio a very happy Christmas with this beautiful Christmas carol, O Holy Night.